Pruebas de certificación. Escucharás el audio dos veces. Dispones de 2 minutos para leer la tarea, 1 minuto entre escuchas, 1 minuto al finalizar la segunda escucha. Tarea 1.
On the 24th of July, 1815, Napoleon Bonaparte was brought to the south coast of England on the Royal Navy warship HMS Bellerophon. Following his defeat at Waterloo, he was hoping for a gentlemanly imprisonment on an English country estate. But the British Prime Minister, Lord Liverpool, had other ideas.
It would not answer to confine him in this country. He would become the object of curiosity immediately, and possibly of compassion in the course of a few months. St. Helena is the place in the world best calculated for the confinement of such a person. At such a place and such a distance, all intrigue would be impossible, and being so far from the European world, he would soon be forgotten.
2 centuries on, of course, Napoleon has been far from forgotten. But the question of how he should be remembered divides opinion to this day. Napoleon's arrival in Britain meant that the Revolutionary and Napoleonic Wars were over. On the 31st of July, Admiral Lord Keith and Sir Henry Bunbury, the Under-Secretary of State for War, arrived in HMS Bellerophon to tell Napoleon of his St. Helenan fate. Britain and France had gone to war 8 times for a total of 56 years between 1689 and 1815, and the 100 days following Napoleon's return from Elba had cost nearly 100,000 men killed and wounded from all sides, and no repetition could ever be risked. Napoleon was devastated at the news.
I would prefer being delivered up to the Bourbons. Among other insults, they style me General. They may as well call me Archbishop.
I've come here to the British Museum to view the exhibition Bonaparte and the British. Many of the myths about Napoleon began with these prints and portraits. However, it's apparent from this exhibition that Napoleon was not simply a hate figure to the British, he was also an object of deep fascination. But why was Napoleon so fascinating? In my opinion, he was the most daring and dynamic figure of his age, living proof that individual heroes could still make a difference and that greatness could be attained through hard work, risk-taking and talent rather than just birth. As George Hume, a midshipman on HMS Bellerophon, said,
"He showed us what one little human creature like ourselves could accomplish in a span so short."
Here at the British Museum, I'm looking at a French print by Lacroix. It shows Napoleon in a metal dustbin, with the Prussian General Blücher and Wellington standing over it, pressing down on the lid. Blücher is complaining that Napoleon is being allowed to breathe, while Wellington assures him that he's finished. Unlike the Bourbons and Prussians who wanted to execute him, the British wanted to exile Napoleon to St. Helena. In total, Napoleon spent over 5.5 years on St. Helena. He would spend up to 12 hours a day dictating his memoirs. "What a novel my life has been," he said, and his retelling of it certainly owed much more to fiction than to fact. He was aware of the cartoons and prints such as this one here by Charles Williams. This print shows the Duke tied up against a tree while Napoleon kills him with his sabre. 5 black, demon-like monkeys dance in delight above Napoleon's head, 2 of which bear a crown. Napoleon very much wanted his memoirs to confound this kind of image, and instead to glorify his victories.
Once published 2 years after his death, Napoleon's memoirs became the greatest international bestseller of the 19th century. His extensive architectural achievements also acted as a constant reminder to the French public of their former emperor. No more so than in Paris. In fact, it was Napoleon himself who first came up with the idea of digging a tunnel under the Channel to invade Britain. Taken as a whole over his short reign, Napoleon built an astonishing amount of what he called my true treasures. In 1804, he said to one of his generals,
"Men are only great through the monuments they leave behind."
Equally long-lasting were Napoleon's civil reforms. Though France was forced back to its pre-Napoleonic frontiers by the end of 1815, most of Napoleon's refashioning of the country was sufficiently well embedded by then that it could not be reversed by the Bourbons when they returned to power. The Napoleonic Code forms the basis of much of European law today, and the Cour des Comptes still checks public spending accounts.
"My true glory is not to have won 40 battles. What nothing will destroy, what will live forever, is my civil code."
The country is still divided. Those on the right tend to revere Napoleon as a strong, enlightened leader, whilst those on the left still see him as a belligerent tyrant. The unmistakable ambiguities of Napoleon's character and rule have allowed subsequent generations to reinterpret his complex image and legacy to suit their own political and social reality. The numerous myths created by both Napoleon himself and his opponents have added to this ambivalence. In the last century, Napoleon's reputation was greatly tarnished by Hitler and Mussolini's admiration for him. Today, Napoleon's star is rising once again as we look beyond the prism of World War II and view his career in context. When Napoleon's mother was complimented on her son's achievements, she replied, "Mais pourvu que ça dure, so long as they last." And they have. On the 24th of July, 1815, Napoleon Bonaparte was brought to the south coast of England on the Royal Navy warship HMS Bellerophon. Following his defeat at Waterloo, he was hoping for a gentlemanly imprisonment on an English country estate. But the British Prime Minister, Lord Liverpool, had other ideas.
"It would not answer to confine him in this country. He would become the object of curiosity immediately, and possibly of compassion in the course of a few months. St. Helena is the place in the world best calculated for the confinement of such a person. At such a place and such a distance, all intrigue would be impossible, and being so far from the European world, he would soon be forgotten.
2 centuries on, of course, Napoleon has been far from forgotten. But the question of how he should be remembered divides opinion to this day.
Napoleon's arrival in Britain meant that the revolutionary and Napoleonic wars were over. On the 31st of July, Admiral Lord Keith and Sir Henry Bunbury, the Under-Secretary of State for War, arrived in HMS Bellerophon to tell Napoleon of his St. Helenan fate. Britain and France had gone to war 8 times for a total of 56 years between 1689 and 1815, and the 100 days following Napoleon's return from Elba had cost nearly 100,000 men killed and wounded from all sides, and no repetition could ever be risked. Napoleon was devastated at the news.
"I would prefer being delivered up to the Bourbons. Among other insults, they style me General. They may as well call me Archbishop."
I've come here to the British Museum to view the exhibition Bonaparte and the British. Many of the myths about Napoleon began with these prints and portraits. However, it's apparent from this exhibition that Napoleon was not simply a hate figure to the British, he was also an object of deep fascination. But why was Napoleon so fascinating? In my opinion, he was the most daring and dynamic figure of his age. Living proof that individual heroes could still make a difference, and that greatness could be attained through hard work, risk-taking, and talent, rather than just birth. As George Hume, a midshipman on HMS Bellerophon, said,
"He showed us what one little human creature like ourselves could accomplish in a span so short."
Here at the British Museum, I'm looking at a French print by Lacroix. It shows Napoleon in a metal dustbin, with the Prussian General Blücher and Wellington standing over it, pressing down on the lid. Blücher is complaining that Napoleon is being allowed to breathe, while Wellington assures him that he's finished. Unlike the Bourbons and Prussians who wanted to execute him, the British wanted to exile Napoleon to St. Helena. In total, Napoleon spent over 5.5 years on St. Helena. He would spend up to 12 hours a day dictating his memoirs. "What a novel my life has been," he said, and his retelling of it certainly owed much more to fiction than to fact. He was aware of the cartoons and prints such as this one here by Charles Williams. This print shows the Duke tied up against a tree while Napoleon kills him with his sabre. 5 black demon-like monkeys dance in delight above Napoleon's head, 2 of which bear a crown. Napoleon very much wanted his memoirs to confound this kind of image, and instead to glorify his victories.
Once published 2 years after his death, Napoleon's memoirs became the greatest international bestseller of the 19th century. His extensive architectural achievements also acted as a constant reminder to the French public of their former emperor. No more so than in Paris. In fact, it was Napoleon himself who first came up with the idea of digging a tunnel under the Channel to invade Britain. Taken as a whole over his short reign, Napoleon built an astonishing amount of what he called my true treasures. In 1804, he said to one of his generals,
"Men are only great through the monuments they leave behind."
Equally long-lasting were Napoleon's civil reforms. Though France was forced back to its pre-Napoleonic frontiers by the end of 1815, most of Napoleon's refashioning of the country was sufficiently well embedded by then that it could not be reversed by the Bourbons when they returned to power. The Napoleonic Code forms the basis of much of European law today, and the Cour des Comptes still checks public spending accounts.
"My true glory is not to have won 40 battles. What nothing will destroy, what will live forever, is my civil code."
The country is still divided. Those on the right tend to revere Napoleon as a strong, enlightened leader, whilst those on the left still see him as a belligerent tyrant. The unmistakable ambiguities of Napoleon's character and rule have allowed subsequent generations to reinterpret his complex image and legacy to suit their own political and social reality. The numerous myths created by both Napoleon himself and his opponents have added to this ambivalence. In the last century, Napoleon's reputation was greatly tarnished by Hitler and Mussolini's admiration for him. Today, Napoleon's star is rising once again as we look beyond the prism of World War II and view his career in context. When Napoleon's mother was complimented on her son's achievements, she replied, "Mais pourvu que ça dure, so long as they last." And they have.